Well, and I can still picture you with mud on your face with one of the other kids making mud mustaches.
Oh, I look so good in a mud mustache. Hello and welcome. I'm your host, Ellen Vasher, an enthusiastic lover of nature and a hoarder of really cool rocks. I'm coming to you from the Center for Nature and Place at Prescott College in Prescott, Arizona. This is the Dirt Alert, where we connect research to practice in nature and place-based early childhood education. This week, we're discussing a study that was just published earlier this year in the International Journal of Early Childhood Environmental Education. If you haven't heard of that, I highly recommend checking it out. This research is titled Nature-Based Education and Kindergarten Readiness. Nature-based and traditional preschoolers are equally prepared for kindergarten. Just like the title suggests, the study aimed to determine if nature-based programs can be just as effective in preparing preschoolers for kindergarten as traditional programs. It looked at two groups of preschool-aged children from the same school. One group was enrolled in the school's outdoor pre-primary program, while the other was enrolled in the school's traditional pre-kindergarten program. As many of us who work in the field of nature and place-based early childhood education would expect, these researchers found that learning in an outdoor environment can indeed be just as effective as preparing these children for kindergarten as the traditional programming. Here to help us dig into this research and what it means for our practice more is Brooke Allegian, lead teacher at Roots of Connection, a forest preschool program in Seattle, Washington.
Hi, Ellen.
So, Brooke, I want to give you an opportunity to introduce yourself and your program. Just kind of describe for our audio listeners the site that you have and a kind of a day in your program.
Well, I have been lucky enough to have been raised by an outdoor educator. My mom did interpretive naturalist work for 11 years before I was born. And so I was sort of brought into the world with an appreciation for nature and just a joy in learning about nature. And I went to the Evergreen State College, where I could really sort of design my own degree program, and I studied Waldorf education, multi-age education, and environmental education. And during that time, I also founded an outdoor school that was called Environmental Connections Outdoor School, ECOS for short. So that was basically a six-year experiment that was fascinating and fun and challenging and gave me the skills that I needed to start another nature school, which is Roots of Connection. Roots of Connection is based in a public park in Seattle, and it's a pretty urban park, but luckily we've been able to have such a good relationship with the park staff that they have tasked us with doing restoration work. Mm-hmm. So the kids at the school have planted over 200 trees and plants, and they take care of, they call them the baby plants, and they take care of them and protect them and keep them watered and watch out for them. And the kids help pick up litter and also have been given the freedom to sort of shape the forest, which I believe is such an important part of outdoor education, is the ability to manipulate the environment. And so the kids have been able to dig holes and build forts and design trails. And all of that is sort of part of their immersive nature experience.
Oh, yeah. That's amazing. For our listeners who may be kind of new to the field of nature or place-based early childhood education, Brooke's background is really unique because just like this field, it is kind of at the intersection of early childhood education and high quality best practices of preparing learners and also of environmental education, that stewardship and connection to the natural world. So Brooke, I'm so excited to get your insight today on some of this research we're talking about. At the heart of this study's findings, researchers found that there was about equal readiness in social emotional skills and in pretend play, as well as in academic skills, which is so interesting because a lot of the time when we're talking kindergarten readiness, we can really focus heavily on those academic skills. So this balance here of finding the equal preparedness in the social emotional development and pretend play where they're cultivating those skills, as well as the academic skills, and seeing that parallel is really awesome. I'm curious what you think. Why do you think that the preparation of both these skills is important for kindergarten readiness for our young learners?
Well, this year it's been really fun to look at these ideas of kindergarten readiness, because Roots of Connection has just started our own kindergarten program where we're working with the state standards to make sure that the kids are meeting all of the requirements and also getting a high quality outdoor education. And so that's been really fun because we've been looking very closely at the Common Core standards, as well as a few other standards that Washington State carries, such as our science standards, which are unique to our state. But as far as including all of those standards within outdoor education, it's remarkably easy. It's, you know, the 4 hours outside, and then they come back and do like an hour and a half of academics. So it's super fun.
Are you doing the academics outside too, or doing the classroom lesson to balance it?
Mostly a classroom lesson to balance it. That way they can just have the immersion and the play when they're outside. Although we do occasionally do kindergarten lessons outside.
Now that your program that you teach, Roots for Connection, also has a school age program. So not all of your students are preschool students, correct?
Right.
And not all are kindergarten students also?
Right. We also have homeschoolers up through age 11.
Wow. So kind of going off of that, I'm curious about how you see the interaction between students who are in school and students who aren't in school in your program, and if that changes that dynamic as well.
Yeah. I mean, the homeschoolers are very interesting because they would probably be described as eccentric, and it's largely because a lot of their strong interests and a lot of their tendencies haven't been socialized out of them yet. And so they tend to come across a little bit younger than their peers who are in school. An 11-year-old homeschooler would probably appear a lot more like a 9-year-old. But at the same time, having that multi-age group is just amazing because the big kids really take on that leadership role and they come up with these fabulous ideas that lead to incredible project-based learning. It's always the big kids who are like, we're building this garden. Like, who wants to help us? Or we're having a play, you know, who wants to be an actor? You know, we're holding a martial arts class. Like, they come up with all kinds of things. And then the younger kids are like, ooh, sure, I want to do that, because they struggle more to come up with their own ideas. And so then there's these project leaders, and then there's engaging things that the younger kids want to participate in. And I think most educators know that kids are more likely to listen to each other than to us or their parents or, you know, whatever. And so having these young leaders who they want to follow directions from is actually a really fun, engaging way for them to practice some of those classroom skills.
You know, that peer mentorship, I think that I've seen that so much in nature programs and especially in multi-age programs. And that is something that's really tricky to facilitate in the classroom, especially when, you know, it's one to two teachers and you've got a lot of learners there. Do you have any students who've been in your program for a long time?
Longest is 4 years because the school's 4 years old.
Wow. So they haven't left. Yeah. I love that. So you get to actually not only get to know some of your students, but you get to see them move from the age that they come in at to those older years. And could you maybe describe kind of one of those students, what age they came in, and how old they are now and what you've seen change since their time at the school?
Yeah. Okay. Well, the first student that comes to mind, he's had a lot of changes since he first came to the school 4 years ago. His emotional regulation has improved tenfold. I mean, when he first came to the school, he really struggled with any sort of structure, and he just had very strong emotional reactions to a lot of things. And through the years of this sort of consistent structure with freedom, you know, like part of it, of how we do things at ROC is that kids, if they, you know, really don't want to come over for the mealtime, they aren't required to. Or if we're playing a game and they don't want to play, they're welcome to sit out and not be forced to participate. So for him, that was a big fear that he came into things with, this fear of expectations. Through the years of understanding that he had freedom within this system, he's really kind of settled down, and it's actually been just this year that he's started to make friends with peers and not just hang out with the teachers all the time.
That's really cool about these, that immersive program where you can, a student can have time to develop at their own pace.
Yeah.
You know, in another setting where they move to a new teacher, they may not they'd have to relearn that relationship and relearn expectations and relearn maybe new peers even too.
Well, I think that most people who have participated in any sort of outdoor education would resoundingly agree that it is an amazing tool for the growth of social and emotional skills. And just the level of challenge, the level of natural consequence, there's so much to it that really pushes kids a little bit out of their comfort zone in such a great way that causes them to become more resilient. And I think that in that discussion of what skills are important for kindergarten and for school in the future in general, resiliency is so important. And I think that, you know, being out in the elements, whether it's rain or snow or heat, you know.
Or a lot of rain where you are.
Yes, a lot
They're of way rain. Better at rain than I am.
But yeah, having that opportunity to develop that resilience and to be able to say, I'm strong, I can get through this. Or to be given a challenge that you've never had before and think, I am capable of getting myself out of this because I've gotten myself out of other situations before. I think one thing that outdoor education offers kids that a more traditional environment might not is the opportunity to really experiment with risk. There's so many opportunities to get yourself into a little bit of a sticky situation where you're not in real danger, but for a child, that might be the most dangerous situation they've been in before. But that experience of being so uncomfortable and so scared and then seeing it out to the other end, and also that experience of having someone who was an adult who was there to make sure I was safe, but not willing to step in and take that experience of suffering away. You know, sometimes that can be especially hard in today's society to let a kid suffer a little bit and let them have that complete experience and not feel like I have to be rescued when I'm suffering, but to actually feel like I can get through this.
That's so funny because it makes me think about my first time that I had to read in front of the class. So it's like kind of funny, that same experience of I can't, I'm afraid, it's not going to turn out. Teacher takes the book for me, but that building that is when you look at early, you know, academic skills, we're seeing it's that sticking with a problem all the way through, trying new solutions, sounding things out is kind of the same as trying, you know, things out there in the field. Yeah.
We have a kid in our kindergarten class this year who is petrified by he's a perfectionist, really. Mm-hmm. And he's just terrified whenever we'll have a new writing type project or a new drawing type project, it really stresses him out. And there's a lot of just comforting him and reminding him that it doesn't have to be perfect, just try your best and it's okay. But I think so many kids go through that where those academic expectations can be just terrifying.
There's also this secondary finding of the study that honestly left me with more questions than answers. And it was this. The researchers found that children in the nature-based program showed more quote unquote problem behaviors than the children in the traditional group. Though it's important to note that these behaviors were still definitely within the normal range of behaviors for children this age. While this was a statistically significant difference, these differences did not place the nature-based group in a problematic behavior area. But what does this even mean? Just some background information. We looked a little more into that. This study doesn't identify anything more specific than quote-unquote problem behaviors. And these are rated using the preschool kindergarten behavior skills, which generally looks at 42 items related to both internalizing, like anxiety, fearfulness, and depression, quiet, not usually seen, and externalizing, like acting out, hyperactivity, hostility, and aggression behaviors. But again, they didn't specify what problem behaviors they noticed in this study. It is an interesting thing that there was a statistical difference. So I'm wondering how you have seen this play out in your practice, since you do get that opportunity to go from both outdoors to the classroom with your preschoolers to kindergarten.
Right. Well, I also have a couple thoughts on aspects that could lead to that difference. One being, you know, what led them to a nature program to begin with? because we've gotten quite a number of kids who have come to our pre-K program from another preschool citing that they were getting in trouble a lot or even that they were being kicked out. And it was usually for behaviors that wouldn't be considered problematic in the forest. You know, big body play, roaring, roughhousing, things like that, or making a lot of noise when they're indoors with a group of other children. This happens so often that we get these kids who, you know, their parents are like, they're being kicked out of their other preschool. And then after the first couple weeks of school, they're like, so really though, how are they doing? And I'm like, really? They're doing great. They're making friends. You know, when they want to wave their stick around, we send them over there so they're safe.
Yeah, I'm just thinking because what I noticed at your school was outside really, even without having specific boundaries at your school, the students had a lot of self-regulation, respect for each other, and respect for the environment, those like kind of key skills. And it's so interesting because I haven't witnessed your students inside, you know, or I haven't witnessed assessment of direct academic skills. And so I'm wondering, like, do you see that in your program, they have more or the other in one situation or the other?
No, it's fascinating. Their self-regulation just falls apart inside. I mean, you know, they're kindergartners, so it takes, you know, that level of classroom management, but it's definitely an act of practicing for them inside, like to be seated and to be all in a room. And it almost feels like their energy just bounces off the walls, you know, but in a way of like them perceiving each other's energy and it all being contained in this small environment. So it's very interesting. They're a lot more focused and like good students outside, in my opinion. That leads me to the question, what is healthiest for kids' development? And some kids at age 4 or 3 can very easily adapt to a classroom environment where there's more expectations of them, but certainly not all kids. And it does really bring me to question, you know, when we're citing these problem behaviors, are some of these just actually reflections on what's the healthiest for their development? Because, you know, when we see things like violent outbursts or attention-seeking behaviors go way down in the outdoor environment, it just makes me think that the outdoor environment is providing them what they need to have a more appropriate outlet for things like that. The fact that we have a place that we call Rowdy Mountain, where the kids are just allowed to wrestle and chase each other and stick fight. And they know that that's a safe place to do that because that's what that area is designated for. However, given that, I think that people could say outdoor programs are much more permissive, you could even say, of certain behaviors that would not be acceptable in a classroom. And I've had parents wonder, you know, we have our kindergarten readiness conferences every year, and I've had parents ask, you know, are they going to be able to adapt to a classroom environment after being kind of feral, you know, out in the woods and having all this freedom? You know, how are they going to cope with suddenly being expected to sit at a desk, you know, and follow instructions and listen when it's time to listen? And I find that our program is structured enough that kids usually adapt well to it. But I personally believe that that's because they had the time to get these behaviors out of their system.
Yeah. Wow. That's, you know, really what I've thought too about this kind of research is when we're saying problem behaviors are those problems in certain environments and not others, and being really clear about that. Now that we've looked at those major findings, it's interesting to consider how this research fits into that larger dialogue we're having in early childhood right now. That topic that first comes to mind is that concern that's emerging around the general way we focus on school readiness and how that focus seems to have encouraged a bit of a push down of expectations and standards into those preschool years. While we want our children to be successful in school, I'm also sometimes asking myself, is kindergarten readiness, you know, quote unquote, readiness an appropriate measure of a program's success or an appropriate measure of a child's development?
Right. I mean, there are a number of things that I do think are pretty crucial. So on this list of kindergarten readiness guidelines for Seattle public schools, one of them is the ability to follow two-step directions. And I think something like that is equally prevalent in an outdoor environment or in an indoor environment, and an extremely important skill for being ready for school. So I think that a kid can be out waving a stick in the forest, or they can be sitting on a rug playing with alphabet blocks. But either way, the real question is, when their teacher asks them to hang up their backpack and then go sit down, are they going to be able to comprehend that, you know, and are they going to be able to follow through and have enough self-regulation to be able to follow those directions? I had a student a couple years ago who was five, and so her mom was debating whether to send her to another year of preschool, which would be at our program, or to send her straight to kindergarten. And after a little bit of talking about it, she decided to send her to our program. And then she said for the next school year, she would just decide if she wanted to send her into kindergarten or skip kindergarten and send her straight to first grade. And after our conferences and things like that, she decided, with a little bit of nervousness, to send her straight to first grade. And even though she was one of the silliest kids who always, you know, she had that little rebellious streak in her and was always up to mischief, but she was so confident in herself, so confident socially, that when she went to first grade, it only took her 3 weeks to catch up to her class. Wow. As far as reading and every other aspect of academics. I mean, it was just seamless. And my belief is that that's because she wasn't stressed out. She was emotionally stable. And that way, when academics were being offered to her, she was a sponge and ready to learn them, rather than being bogged down by stress and expectations and things like that. You know, having that year to just be a kid and be silly, I think it enabled her to be a faster learner, or to be more able to learn when she sets her mind to it. You know?
That's so interesting, because I'm thinking about in the Seattle kindergarten readiness standards, and if some of those maybe are coming in at a time where something should be emphasized instead of some other things on there. Like, I'm thinking about what you just said about feeling confident and feeling ready to learn. And do you think that in that talk of kindergarten readiness, you know, is that seeing how much that supports learners? Is that being emphasized enough, or are other things being emphasized more?
Right. And I mean, that, you know, isn't even in the readiness guidelines. There's nothing about, you know, feeling confident or showing interest in learning. You know, that's not listed at all. We've got, you know, follow two-step directions, can follow routines, can talk about their own feelings, can calm themselves when frustrated or upset. I see why they're important to kindergarten. However, are they curious? Should be the first question. Are they excited to learn? I've never met a kid who's not interested in some aspect of nature, you know, and just being out and immersed in it makes you automatically curious. And so that's so much of what I think most outdoor education programs try to offer, is this sense of, like, let's follow your curiosity and let's build upon that. And I think that that really does set kids on a great path for learning. I've seen a lot of anecdotal evidence that shows the true benefit to allowing kids the time to learn at their own pace. And there have been kids that I've been concerned about how late they're learning how to read. And I'll think, if that was my kid, I would have taught them how to read a long time ago. But it turns out for those kids, the very second they were ready, they just picked it up like that. And it was sort of like me for riding a bike. I took such a long time to learn how to ride a bike. And then one day I had the intrinsic motivation. And I was like, I'm going to learn to do it while my parents aren't watching, and they're going to be so surprised. And sure enough, it was like minutes, you know, just such a quick process to learn it. And I think that allowing kids that space to be ready and to have authentic curiosity is so important, and something that more traditional learning environments, it's harder to include that. And I feel very lucky that in outdoor education, I have a lot of freedom to let the kids learn at their own pace.
Yeah, I can see that for some students, having that academic challenge is exactly what their brain needs and exactly what they want to keep moving forward. One thing that I love about your program, Brooke, is the integration of bird language and how you've built those academic skills into an entirely outdoor-based and nature-based activity.
My favorite nerd topic. Yes. So I have had the great privilege of getting to learn from John Young, who has written an amazing book folks might be interested in called What the Robin Knows. And through that, I developed a program for kids to practice early literacy skills and communication skills through observing, recording, and discussing the bird language that we observe. What we do is we have the kids get acquainted with taking notes, and we base them off of sort of like a spectrogram reading, which is a device that takes the tone and the time, and it makes a little squiggle. So it'll show what a bird call visually looks like, which is also a really great tool for people who might be hearing impaired. So there's these symbols to represent each different bird call. And what I've taught the kids to do is basically make up their own. So if they hear a bird call that goes up to a high pitch and then stays level, they'll draw like a steep line up and then a line flat across. I also tell them that they can use letters if they want to. So I see in a lot of the kids' work, they'll have the letter D repeatedly when they hear a chickadee, and they'll just write capital D over and over and over again. Or T sounds. There's a lot of consonant sounds that they experiment with just to try to record this bird language that they hear. They have the option to use different colors if they want to use, say, red to represent an alarm call and blue to represent a baseline call. So they're listening not only to the sound of the bird call, but also to the intensity and the emotion of it. And they're basically trying to make up a story in their brain about what the birds might be talking about. We create this idea that their multiple observations can be put together to create a whole picture story of what's happening in the forest. So allowing them to take these little pieces of information and sort of solve a mystery to create a story. And then we can ask them what happened during the beginning of the bird sit and ask them to only describe parts from, the first 10 minutes. And then it really challenges them to understand story structure, but not through the context of, a picture book. It's through the context of a real life story. And for them to then be able to sort of synthesize that in their brains and say, okay, well, first when I sat down, I heard this, this, and that. And then in the middle, I heard this, this, and that. And then at the end, and to actually have that real life experience of understanding, like, the end is what feels most recent to me. The beginning is what feels most distant, and things like that are,
parts that's of incredible.
It too. Those things that you can't really understand until you experience it.
I mean, we're already talking about first grade recall skills and analyzing texts and having those discussions about texts and asking questions about texts. That's the same exact process.
Yeah.
That's such a unique practice. And I think that it really highlights for, teachers or administrators or parents who are listening who aren't familiar with a lot of the ways that nature and place-based learning happens. When you're outside, thinking that it is all free play and there's an integration and a huge component that's that free play, but the guided play as well is one of those times where those skills, both social, emotional, and academic, as you wove together there, happen so successfully outside.
Yeah.
I think it's really great because after this whole conversation, I'm sitting here coming back to, what are they learning? And it almost makes me laugh at this point because it's obvious it's maybe we should be saying, how much are they learning or how much more can they learn or how can we measure all of this amazing learning that's happening out there?
One thing I would also just add to what we've talked about is that there are so many different styles of outdoor schools, of outdoor preschools, of forest schools. There's so many different ways to achieve a similar goal. And I think that one thing that all of these schools share is the desire to get kids outside more for their growth and development. Really, any time spent outdoors will benefit children.
Are there some things that have really worked for you to keep integrating the really successful parts of outdoor learning as they transition into the classroom?
I mean, certainly for me as a teacher, following their intrinsic motivation is such a huge part, because that's something that you can do outdoors or indoors. And I think that every teacher has had that child with a lot of problem behaviors. They also probably have a very strong fixed interest, whether it's dinosaurs or, you know, Elsa or whatever it might be. You know, almost every kid has an almost obsessive fixed interest. And to allow that to guide their learning can be such a powerful tool, because they might have no interest in what you're showing them until you relate it to the thing that they care about. And so I think that that's been one of the biggest takeaways, is to just really, you know, stop trying to push my own agenda on them and think that if I pay attention to what matters to them, we can work the academics in.
So thanks for listening to the Dirt Alert with me, Ellen, your host. I'd like to thank Brooke Allegian again for joining us on this episode from her school Roots of Connection in Seattle. I'd also like to thank Sarah Fogelsong, our producer, and Taryn Gray, our editor extraordinaire. If you like our show and want to know more, please check out our website, www.centerfornatureandplace.org. Feel free to register for our upcoming Summer Institute in June. A week-long immersive exploration of these exact concepts we've been talking about today and how you can apply them in your own practice. Next month, you can join us as we dive deeper into how nature-based learning supports children's health and well-being with Carol Darrow and Dan Janone from Primavera School in Prescott, Arizona, and continue uncovering how research in this field connects with practice on the ground. Peace.
Yeah.
Woo! Have a fabulous day or night.